bodybuilders, they definitely have this reputation or stereotype of being very bro when it comes to nutrition. One of the biggest mistakes that bodybuilders make when it comes to nutrition is, in old-fashioned bodybuilding, there were generally just two phases, right? There was comp prep and there was the off-season.
Yeah.
You know, very two different ends of the spectrum in the sense of people would go freaking hard and then they would just completely let it go, you know? There's four different phases, so we've got having sufficient dietary iron and adequate ferritin levels is really important. At the same time, generally that actually does come with the loss of a menstrual cycle. Post-comp, that needs to be a top priority for the athlete and the coach to undertake an adequate recovery process so that they can regain their menstrual cycle.
Welcome, fitness fanatics, to the PhysiCal podcast, where we dive deep into fitness, health, and the business behind it all. I'm Coach Cal, and I am here to help you break the mold. Welcome back to another episode of the PhysiCal podcast. I am so over the moon because today we are diving into all things nutrition, specifically as it relates to bodybuilding, but also gym goers in general. So I am very excited because the guest that we have today is going to deliver all of us this juicy information. She has so much knowledge. So the guest that we have today is a dietitian, a nutrition and exercise scientist, IFBB bikini athlete, and also co-host of the Bodybuilding Dietitians podcast. Welcome, Tierra.
Thank you so much, Cal, for having me today. I've been looking forward to being on this podcast for a long time now, ever since that you offered it. And it should just be really fun to talk.
Yeah, you are such an expert in what you do, and I've consumed so much of your content. And I just know that whatever we're going to be talking about today is just really going to help our audience and our listeners. So I might dive into the first question.
Let's do it.
I like to get stuck into it. What is one of the biggest nutritional mistakes that you see bodybuilders making at the moment?
Okay. Wow. All right. Just one?
We can extend to two if you need.
So I think that bodybuilders, they definitely have, you know, this reputation or stereotype of being very bro when it comes to nutrition. And I still think that there is merit in bro science. And, you know, there is some merit in nutritional protocols, you know, related to bodybuilders. But also, I don't think that it has to be just all bro science and nothing that's legitimately evidence-based. Mm-hmm. I think that we need to find somewhere happy in the middle. So I think that one of the biggest mistakes that bodybuilders make when it comes to nutrition is just taking things to extremes, you know, really developing that sort of all or nothing mindset, and also just unnecessarily excluding a lot of food groups, right? Mm. Because we have to think that the world of nutrition, you know, there are so many wonderful foods out there that provide us with essential micronutrients that we need to thrive as human beings. And unfortunately, a lot of bodybuilders are under the impression that when they undertake a comp prep, they have to go to these levels of extremes where they can only eat from a subset group of certain foods, you know, or they have to exclude certain foods. Like they have to exclude whole food groups, like all dairy products, you know, or all whole grains, or they have to exclude red meat and they can only eat chicken breast and WPI protein powder and egg whites, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's where people really run into at least long-term health conditions, particularly females, because mm-hmm. if females undertake a comp prep, which is a chronic stint of dieting, you know, for well over 6 months in duration, but they're only eating from very select food sources, you know, they're only eating white rice and sweet potato as their carb sources. They're excluding all fruit. They're excluding all dairy. Again, protein, they're really just sticking to chicken breast and maybe some white fish, egg whites, you know, things of that nature. Like short-term micronutrient deficiencies don't happen, luckily, because our body has a lot of stores of essential micronutrients. But long-term, right, as females, we can really run into some health issues. So for example, if girls aren't consuming sufficient dietary iron through red meat and also are still menstruating too, they are going to run into iron deficiency. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge issue. Also, girls who aren't consuming any dairy products or calcium fortified alternatives, and they are also coinciding that with a chronic stint of dieting too, they're basically asking for loss of bone mineral density. And we know how important maintaining our bone mineral density is for later in adult life, so that we can risk the incidences of falls and injuries, you know, and just fractures, all these sort of things. So I think that we need to find somewhere happy in the middle where, of course, like bro science and bodybuilding nutrition has merit in terms of like, yeah, you do want to evenly distribute your protein throughout the day. And yes, you do want to prioritize carbohydrates around your training window. And there certainly are certain foods out there that are going to digest better than others. Mm-hmm. But we also need to make sure that we're still hitting our baseline fundamentals of ensuring that we still have a very nutrient-dense diet with a variety of whole foods in there, accompanied with plenty of different plants, and we're not excluding things simply just for the sake of it. You know, it's simply really, you should only be excluding foods out of your diet if you genuinely don't like the taste of them or you have allergies or intolerances, you know, like, for example, you just ethically, you don't feel right eating that sort of food either, or even geographically, maybe you don't have access to that sort of food, or it's going to cost you an arm and a leg to buy it at the supermarket, right?
Mm-hmm. You touched on the fact that the reduction in iron potentially is a lack of those nutrients as well. And it's super common for women to lose their menstrual cycle throughout that prep period. Would you say that that's a key contributor to the reason why that happens, or is it also coupled with the, I guess, strenuous activity and stress that you're putting on your body?
That's a really good question. So, of course, having sufficient dietary iron and adequate, you know, ferritin levels is really important for maintaining higher energy availability and a properly functioning body, right? But at the same time, it is true that just with the territory of this sport and the conditioning required for a lot of females to get into these days, generally that actually does come, you know, with the loss of a menstrual cycle. Just acutely, it shouldn't be chronic, right? And it generally just happens for most females, not all, but for most females, generally it'll last probably 1 to 3 months prior to their competition. And, you know, perhaps like not consuming sufficient dietary iron could play a role in that, but it's more so the case of their body just recognizes that, hey, we don't have adequate energy available right now to dedicate to reproduction. It wouldn't be the wisest idea to try to get pregnant and actually, you know, try to take care of offspring right now. We'll wait for a later date, maybe when we're in a more well-fed state. So obviously our reproductive system kind of temporarily shutting down in that case, it does come with the territory of competing, at least for divisions that are requiring very high levels of conditioning these days. You know, there's some divisions out there that, you know, really you can do it in quite a healthy manner, and a girl shouldn't have to get to the extremes of such low levels of body fat that they are losing their menstrual cycles. For example, I'd say ICN bikini, quite an entry-level division. But when we're talking about other female divisions that require a very high level of muscularity coincided with conditioning and very low levels of body fat, things like figure or fitness, or even these days, to be honest, IFBB bikini, like, it's, it really is true that a lot of girls who at least have regular menstrual cycles or natural menstrual cycles in the sense that they're not using a form of hormonal contraception, they likely will lose it for a period of time. But then post-comp, that needs to be a top priority for the athlete and the coach to undertake an adequate recovery process so that they can regain their menstrual cycle.
Okay, I love that. And you mentioned as well in, as a part of my initial question, the fact that, you know, people are excluding food groups or, you know, they're going to these extremes. And naturally, having really good guidance is going to be a preventer, I guess, from people doing those types of things. But something that I guess I wanted to ask you is there's a lot of information in the industry, a lot of coaches, a lot of people providing this advice to competitors, and a lot of competitors in this sport are first timers as well. What would you say are some of the key things to look for in order to find yourself that advisory person in terms of, I guess, discerning what information is being put out there that might be accurate and that is someone that is actually going to be able to help you positively get through that journey versus, you know, some other coaches that might just be providing, you know, very generic information, or it might also ultimately be the reason why that person at the end has a actually awful experience in the sport and doesn't want to return. What would be some of the things that you would recommend looking for when someone might be lacking in that knowledge level themselves but still needs to make a really good decision?
Yeah, it's a really, really good question, because, you know, social media these days, it's basically like a resume for coaches. Yeah. A lot of coaches, you know, they'll post their client transformations on their page, and someone who isn't very well versed in this industry, you know, might just find a coach with 150,000 followers. He's got a whole team of girls with big butts and tiny waists, and they all look great. And that's basically their resume to say, hey, I can get results. Mm. And there's no denying that in this industry, in physique sports, results matter. We all want to, at the end of the day, get on stage looking good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But obviously, it's about the steps that are taken to get to that point and the aftermath. Mm. So that's why it's really important to do your research with coaches, because the internet is just littered with them these days. And unfortunately, there is quite a low barrier for entry. You know, anyone can just go online and say, I'm a coach. Hire me. You know, I can put you in a calorie deficit and get you on a stage. I know a thing or two. Probably not. You know, they should probably know about 100 things. But I would really look at not. Again, results matter. So you do want to make sure that you are working with a coach that does have a good reputation of getting people, obviously, to stage, feeling really confident in the package that they're presenting. But also, you want to make sure that they have legitimate credentials underneath them. Mm-hmm. So that's the case of perhaps they have some tertiary level education. Perhaps they have a bachelor degree in nutrition and exercise science. Perhaps they do have a master's degree in dietetics. Or if they don't have tertiary level education, perhaps they've undergone additional studies through something like Sports Nutrition Australia or Sports Nutrition Association or the International Olympic Committee, you name it. So they have demonstrated that they've gone to that extent to do further study. I think that is so paramount, because that then demonstrates that, one, they care in educating themselves and they're committed to actually being a lifelong learner, but also they genuinely care about the health of their clients. They don't just care about how much body fat their clients have on them. They actually care about, like, okay, cool, you look good on the outside, but what's happening internally? You know, I think that is just, that is so, so important. So really looking at people's, obviously, qualifications, and also, like, speaking to some of the clients too, and not just speaking to the superstars on the team, you know, but like, just asking around, like, hey, what was your experience like with this coach? I think it's really important to do your research, because, you know, committing to a coaching relationship, it's kind of like you can't just see someone on Tinder and, like, you know, swipe right, go on one date, and it's like, yeah, he's the one. You know, like, you know, suss him out, go on a few dates, and if he's not the one, say adios and find someone else. You know, like, it doesn't, like, really, people should, if anything, actually interview coaches and actually before they make their decision, because you are committing to a long-term relationship with someone in this industry. If you have ambitions of getting on a stage one day, you know, it's, and depending on your starting point, it could actually be a number of years before you actually get to that point. Or if you really want to make a career out of this or really pursue it long term, you want to be working with a coach for, you know, you could be going on 2, 4, 6, a decade worth of having someone in your corner.
Yeah. Okay. And you mentioned interviewing them.
Yeah.
Are there any good questions that someone should be asking in that initial process?
Yeah. So and to be honest, like, I do a lot of discovery calls with clients and potential clients. And this is something that I've learned in my line of work to actually just ask straight up in the sense of, like, I actually ask very openly and transparently, like, are you actually in the process of speaking to other coaches right now? Mm. And sometimes if they say no, I'm actually the one to encourage them to do so, because everything that I just said, I explain that to them. You know, I'm like, this is a really important decision. And it's important that you obviously pick someone that you vibe really well with, just because you think someone sounds good, or, you know, they look good, or whatever it may be. Like, again, you have to really click with someone because there has to just be amazing communication and full trust there and mad respect too. But in terms of questions to actually ask, I would just pick their brain. You know, I would ask all about, you know, the process of, I would send the coach some physique photos of mm-hmm. yours. And I would ask them to actually give you a physique assessment. So based on your current level of muscularity, your current level of conditioning, also like your training age as well. And also just like your structure and everything of that nature, I would ask them, you know, what do you think is a realistic timeline for me to actually be getting on stage? And also, which categories do you think that I would suit best? And then a coach really should be able to assess that from the pictures and actually kind of give you a bit of a draft timeline, you know, like, okay, based on, you know, your structure, I think that you would be suited really well to the sports model category. However, you know, in order to be highly competitive in that category, we'd probably be looking at undertaking this length of time in an improvement season. Then we'd be doing this amount of time in a pre-prep and then a prep itself. And also, I always ask clients, like, do you have a vision for yourself? Because even if I give someone a physique assessment and I'm like, yeah, you know, like you would be phenomenal in bikini. Mm-hmm. But they're like, I really want to be a figure athlete, right? Yeah. Like, I think, like, really holding true to your vision that you have for yourself, I think that is so important. Mm-hmm. And also, like, explaining to that person as well of being like, okay, well, then we've got actually quite a few different options here. You know, like, either we could full send it for your goals for figure, but realistically, you're probably not going to get on stage for about 5 years. Yeah. Because, like, figure requires a lot of muscle mass mm-hmm. and pretty gnarly levels of conditioning. Again, dependent on their age, their starting point, you know, their training history, et cetera. Or it's the case of, you know, maybe we actually need to answer that big overarching question first of, do you even like bodybuilding? Do you even like competing? Because can you imagine undertaking like a 5-year improvement season, actually getting on stage and being like, you know, it was okay.
Yeah.
Like, and I think there's so much to be said for actually improving as an athlete, actually undertaking the prep itself, because you learn so much about yourself through a prep, just truly what you're made of. You know, I would say it's far more of a mental challenge than it is a physical, because like our body will just follow our mind, right? Yeah. And you learn so much through that experience of undertaking a prep, so many valuable and yeah, sometimes some hard lessons too, but it makes you a much, much better competitor. So if someone has a long-term vision for themselves, but also it's the case of like, we need to get some stage experience under your belt. Yeah, don't throw them into the next season, but say like, how about we consider climbing the ranks? Again, if they're in the position to do that.
Yeah, definitely. And it's such a good point that you make, because I was actually speaking with Jason from ICN the other day in terms of, you know, what the makeup is of athletes that step on stage. 50% are first timers. Yeah. And he was saying as well that generally those people will step on stage maybe 2-3 times, but they might not actually continue with bodybuilding, which just lends itself. And I actually did the same thing. I stepped on, you know, 2 seasons and did 4 or 5 comps, completely trashed my relationship with weights, nutrition, everything. It was just way too extreme. I did everything wrong, you know, based on what we knew now. I still loved it at the time, and I've come back to fall in love with all of these things.
And but you learnt from those experiences.
Yeah, exactly. And it just goes to show, though, that it is not for everybody. And I think for some people, they'll dive into it their want for stepping on stage is purely just because they need a goal. They need a goal to diet or to achieve this body composition for, which is okay as well, but it might be maybe a little bit too extreme. Yeah. But it just lends itself to what you were saying, which is that, you know, really question whether or not you actually love doing this day in, day out. And I think as a part of that, you were mentioning as well the process of having, was it an improvement season?
In old-fashioned bodybuilding, there were generally just 2 phases, right? There was comp prep and there was the off-season.
Yeah.
You know, very 2 different ends of the spectrum, in the sense of people would go freaking hard and then they would just completely let it go, you know? But evidence-based bodybuilding has now formed into these four different phases. So you start off in your improvement season phase, which, you know, generally bodybuilders will be spending the largest amount of time in their improvement seasons compared to any other phase in their bodybuilding career, at least if they want longevity and sustainability in the sport. Like, when people refer to bodybuilding being a lifestyle, they should be referring to the improvement season. They should be referring to, like, yeah, comp prep is my lifestyle, unless you're a professional bodybuilder. But even then, professional bodybuilders need to take improvement seasons.
Yeah.
But there's four different phases. So we've got the improvement season, and then the improvement season transitions into pre-prep. Pre-prep then transitions into comp prep, and then comp prep transitions into your recovery phase. And the recovery phase then bleeds back into the improvement season. So it's this beautiful cycle.
So when we're bringing in a coach into that, how important and at what phase should we be starting that journey with them? Because also something that I do see, which is might not necessarily be wrong in that sense, but is, you know, people, they want to step on stage, they'll go jump in with a coach, and then they're like, yep, cool, let's prep. Right? How does that lend itself to, I don't know, even determining what that, how that athlete responds in terms of different calorie intakes? How do you know, where to start them, like what their maintenance is, how to drop them? Is that what, like, an essential element to start earlier and do those, you know, the improvement or the pre-seasons with a coach in order to get and gather all of that data?
Yeah, so I think it's the most important take-home message to just explain to competitors is that competitive physiques are built in the improvement season. They're only revealed in a comp prep. And you really need to dedicate a lot of yourself in the improvement season to actually, one, make bodybuilding a lifestyle for yourself. Really ingrain some default habits, behaviors, routines that really serve you. And at the end of the day, like, you have to love it. You know, you have to love the day in, the day out. Just, you have to fall in love with almost the monotony. Like, it has to bring you pure happiness. Like, going to the gym a certain number of times per week, like on certain days, and training certain muscle groups, and like just celebrating those tiny little wins. Like, yes, you know, finally I got that one extra rep on my shoulder press. Like those little things. And just really enjoying that, enjoying the food, right? And enjoying, obviously, just being very structured and deliberate with everything that you do. So truly building a lifestyle for yourself in the improvement season, but also being able to undertake, you know, those very beneficial but like strategic kind of building phases, dieting phases. And it's huge, actually. People forget that dieting is a skill, you know, like like people can hardly even last 6 days with being adherent, like let alone 6 months in a comp prep, right?
Yeah.
So people need to be exposed to these kind of mini stints of dieting throughout their improvement season. You know, the cool kids on the block call them mini cuts. So you undertake, you know, building phases, and then you can go through these brief little mini cuts. And obviously mini cuts are beneficial in the sense of, like, you can lose a little bit of body fat. You can get a little bit of a sneak peek for what you've kind of built during the improvement season to reveal more of, obviously, your musculature. But also, I think there's certainly something to be said for just reinforcing that dieting is a skill, right? And it's certainly one of those things that's easier said than done. You know, everyone's like, oh, you know, I could easily eat less food for a few weeks, you know? Like, what's so hard about that? Like, trying to do that, but also coincided with trying to maintain your training performance as well, really being able to push through those days that you just feel those sort of energy dips, just learning to be able to actually properly embrace the feeling of physiological hunger and actually sit in that and accept it, because it's uncomfortable, right? So it's really important that people are briefly exposed to that every single few months in the improvement season, so that they obviously get those kind of little taste testers and reminders of, like, okay, what could I expect from a prep? Because this is only a 6 week diet. I'm thinking about doing this for 6 months straight. Do I have what it takes?
Yeah.
So there's that huge kind of mental aspect of it, but also working alongside a coach, it's so beneficial for the coach, because the longer you can spend in the improvement season with a coach, not only are you just going to continue to develop as a physique athlete, like developing your physique, getting stronger over time, again, just becoming a better bodybuilder, having a lot of these things just become ingrained into you, and happily so. But a coach really gets to know your body. They understand how metabolically adaptive are you. When we go into these dieting phases, can we just basically cut 500 calories from your predicted maintenance and you will steadily drop? Or is it the case of, holy smokes, you're really adaptive. Your resting heart rate dropped by 10 beats overnight and 500 calories didn't do squat. You know, like, we've got to drop you by like 1,000 calories.
Ouch.
And like, but it's really important to know that about an athlete, because obviously then prepares you for what you can expect in a prep as well. But, you know, metabolic adaptation, there's two sides to the coin. People who generally have to push really hard in dieting phases, generally, like, when you get them back into like up to maintenance or calorie surplus, you obviously it's a gift and a curse, right? Like, generally you can push your food on the higher end when you're in a building phase or a maintenance phase, but when push comes to shove and you want to lose some body fat, your body's like, yeah, you're really gonna have to push here.
yeah.
But yeah, there's so much just value as a coach getting to truly understand a client, and it gives them so much confidence in themselves, right? That they're gonna have what it takes to obviously undertake a prep, but also you yourself as a coach, like, you can be really confident in the case of, once you do decide to commit to that goal, like, there's not going to be any fluffing around, you know, like, you can hit the ground running from the very get-go. You don't have to sort out all these little kinks like, oh God, you know, like, I thought you were in a calorie deficit, but you're actually not dropping. Or, hey, you know, like, you actually aren't very adherent with hitting all of your training sessions during the week, or you still don't actually have quite a grasp on nutrition, right? Like, there's a huge educational component to the improvement season. So yeah, the improvement season, it's just, it's where it's at.
I love it. All right. Changing, what did I say? What's the saying? Changing tracks, lanes?
Diverting course?
Yeah. One of those. Anyone, whichever one works for you guys. What would you say, or do you have any particularly controversial opinions related to nutrition in bodybuilding or gym at the moment? Like, do you have any particular, like, controversial opinions that some people wouldn't necessarily agree with?
Ooh, I think it's just the case of talking in absolutes, right? I think that when people out there in the industry, they give these blanket statements, like, as if it's going to apply to every single competitor, I think that's a bit of a red flag. And I think that's something that you should kind of watch out for. You'll understand that the people who are, let's just say, a little bit more trustworthy and open-minded in this industry, they're never going to talk in absolutes. They're never going to say never. So there you go. Don't trust me, because I'm saying never. But it's more so the case of, like, they're not going to say, like, this will happen, or this must happen, or this can't happen, etc. It's more like, this might happen. Mm-hmm. Potentially this could happen. One of their favorite phrases is, it depends. Of course. But it's more so they're never going to talk in absolutes. And I guess a controversial one would be, let's talk about bikini competitors, right? You might hear some coaches out there say, I never program my bikini competitors' core exercises. Bikini competitors should not train abs because the criteria says they don't want an etched out six pack. It's like, okay, that makes sense. Oh, that's the criteria. They don't want an etched out six pack. But who on God's earth has ever done a few sit-ups and it's like, oh, whoops, grew a six pack? And also recognizing that everyone is starting off with completely different genetics, a completely different athletic history, and also everyone's a different responder to training. So it's the case of, some people need to train certain muscle groups in order to properly balance out and develop their physique that other competitors might not need to. And that's really it. It's the case of, like, we can't give just blanket statements. We can't give just cookie cutter programs out there and say that, like, for this specific division or this specific category, you should do this, or you must do this, or you can't do that. It really is the case of, it depends on you as an athlete. It depends on what you need for your physique to truly fit the criteria. Because For example, let's say IFBB bikini. You still need a very aesthetically looking core. With you still need some muscular definition in there. Dare do I say toned. But not everyone is starting off with genetics where they can just train their abs and they do just have those sort of sick, like a well-defined six pack. Some people need to train their abs multiple times per week with weights for years on end, just so that they can develop a little bit in their core, because perhaps they're just not a very high responder to resistance training. It takes a lot for them to actually build muscle mass, or they're not coming from that sort of athletic history of actually, you know, doing a whole bunch of gymnastics and somersaults when they were growing up, or doing some sort of sport like horseback riding where you're always just required to brace your core. Mm-hmm. So I think that's probably the biggest thing, is that I get a little bit, you know, sensitive about core training and abs training. And when people say, you know, abs are made in the kitchen, it's like, what a joke. You know, like people say, all you have to do is just diet down and you'll have a six pack. I'm like, yeah, freaking right. And you would never say that about any other muscle group. Like, imagine if someone's like, oh yeah, you know, to get biceps, all you need to do is get lean enough, right? You flex and you're just like, it's just deflated. It's like, I starved myself. I still don't have biceps. Why do people think that abs are any different? You know, like they're still a muscle group. Yeah, so that's
thank you so much. That's definitely
a bit of my controversy there.
Oh my, no, honestly, this is when I had this question in mind, that was something that popped in, because I was speaking to a friend recently, and they're not in the bodybuilding world, mm-hmm. but it's come from social media, and it is that classic line that you just said, yeah. that abs are made in the kitchen, yeah. you know, you could lose all of your body fat, you know, not all of it. Naturally, you're still going to see the muscle uh-huh. eventually, right? But for most people, yeah, you're going to need to train the muscle yeah. if you want to see the muscle.
Yeah, legit. Like, because I've been in that situation myself before. Like, yeah. I come from an athletic history of playing basically every sport under the sun, but especially in high school, I did a lot of endurance running, mm-hmm. and that was unfortunately coincided with quite a few disordered eating habits and things of that nature when I was a teenager. And for someone who's over 176 centimeters tall, I got to the point where I was 51 kilos. Mm-hmm. You know, for reference, right now I'm around 60 kilos.
Yeah.
And even at 51 kilos, I had very, very low levels of body fat on me. My stomach was basically just concave, yeah. you know, like I didn't have any resemblance of a block, you know, it was very, very flat. And it was just concave because I had no muscle mass there. Yeah. And actually myself as a physique athlete, like a huge component, well, not a huge component, like basically my feedback has all along has been just, you just need more time and you just need more muscle. And I'm like, cool, I'll get to work on that.
Yeah.
But for these past 3 years of my improvement season, I've actually deliberately trained my core 5 times per week. And I do a combination of resistance-based exercises. So I love like cable crunches. I love the ab crunch machine. I love weighted decline sit-ups, you know, but coincided with like some body weight movements too, like, you know, like things to failure, laying on a yoga mat, you know, like reverse crunches, flutter kicks, etc. A mix mm-hmm. of things. But after 3 years of putting that much effort into my core, no, I certainly still don't have a freaking rocking like superwoman six pack, but now I legitimately have more muscle mass in my core. Mm. And when I take my progress photos, it's far more aesthetically pleasing to actually look at because I've developed muscle in that area. But that's unique to me for my physique. So that's why it's really, really important that if you're working alongside a coach, or, you know, you're assessing your own physique and you have aspirations to compete in a certain criteria, like, yes, obviously pay attention to what the criteria is for that division. But you also need to take a good hard look at yourself and say, like, which muscle groups do I actually need to develop?
Mm. I love that. I love that so much because that is just absolutely 100% yeah. what I think as well. Hey, I actually just realized now that we were speaking, I had a friend on last week who suffered with anorexia when she was younger. And we have noticed that she's a gym girl now, like yeah. love and life, all great. But you might be able to comment on this. We were trying to figure out for her whenever she tries to cut, extreme difficulty with it, like little little signs of improvement for like an extended period of time. Do you know if that's something that is, I guess, linked with potentially her prior anorexia and what that might have, I guess, done for her body? Or obviously there's a lot of other factors that might come into that.
Of
but
course.
Is that something that might have impacted that?
Yeah, there's not a hefty amount of research specifically into this space because unfortunately there's not a lot of funding for long-term bodybuilding studies, let's say. But at the same time, there's certainly been a lot of anecdotes in the health and fitness industry saying that people who have undertaken those very extreme, very chronic stints of dieting where they've gotten down to severely low levels of body fat, and in the case of anorexia, they legitimately did starve themselves.
Yeah.
Even if they are years past that and they feel like they're fully mentally recovered and they can actually get their body composition into a place where it looks like they're physically recovered too, anecdotally, yes, like when they do try to go back into an energy deficit, like the body is very, very resistant to it. It's like, whoa, we remember what happened last time, you know? So it can become a little bit thrifty in the sense of, there is this term called thrifty metabolism, but in the sense of like, it really just treats like everything as a scarcity. So it's like, okay, if I get any sort of sense that I am in an energy deficit and like I'm going to be deprived of energy, I'm going to go to extreme extents to try to conserve every single ounce of energy I possibly can, because I don't want to go back to that place. I'm legitimately scared. That wasn't healthy. That wasn't fun. So, you know, some people coin it in this industry like metabolic damage, which isn't like a legitimate term, but people understand what that means in the sense of like, if you do go through a very, very tough and difficult dieting phase initially where you do lose a lot of body fat, if you try to do it again, sometimes the body responds just fine, right? But at other times, it starts to do really strange things physiologically. So like in the form of like metabolic adaptation and adaptive thermogenesis, the body has a lot of really intelligent ways of trying to conserve energy. So for example, resting heart rate, you know, like when you're in a well-fed state, your resting heart rate might be around normal sinus rhythm, so which is around like 60 beats per minute. If you go into any form of energy deficit, it could drop, you know, within like 2 or 3 days by like 10 or 12 beats, right? Mm-hmm. And 10 or 12 beats every minute of every hour of every day of every week of every month, that adds up to a lot of heartbeats, and that's a lot of calories.
Yeah.
So things like that, our respiratory rate slows down, you know? So basically, like, we take less breaths every single minute. We fidget less, you know? We move less. We have less vocal projection. We aren't as animated when we talk. Like, all of these little things, even the gut. So, like, our intestines, they actually slow down in terms of, like, how they slow down in terms of how quickly they want to digest food. Even our gut microbiome can change, so that normally when we were consuming certain types of foods with certain fiber types, yes, it would try to, you know, harvest some energy from some of them. But for the most part, we're just having healthy bowel motions and it's just like, see you later when you go to the bathroom. But the body can become very stingy in the sense of like, ooh, you know, even though this is technically fiber, you know, I can break this down and I can turn this into short chain fatty acids in the guts, and that can be absorbed into the bloodstream and that can be utilized as energy. So the body goes to all these very extreme extents of like trying to extract calories from any food that you eat, and also just trying to conserve energy to the best of its ability from anything that you do. So certainly is a very sticky situation to be in. It is difficult to navigate. But if it is the case of someone is very determined to say, okay, I still want to be a bodybuilder, even though I have to push very, very hard in terms of like an energy output and on an energy input side of things, but I'm still determined to do this, then it's the case of like, one, the coach and the client need to be fully transparent and on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
You need to give yourself adequate time to prep. In your improvement seasons, don't push the boundaries. Don't put on unnecessary weight gain if it's going to be really, really hard to take off as well. And don't compare your preps to other people. You know, a lot of people can just feel so defeated when, you know, they're like, well, why does she get to eat 300 grams of carbs per day? And she's always posting on Instagram on how she's getting new lows. And I'm on 100 grams of carbs per day and my weight's plateauing. Like, don't fall into that nasty trap of comparison either, because everyone's different. Everyone's on a completely different journey.
Yeah, definitely. And that's, I think social media these days is not helping with that as well. Not just, you know, in the bodybuilding sense, they tend to be a little bit more educated and we kind of maybe tend to know that that's just the name of the game. Some people are going to be able to eat more, others less, and the macro breakdowns are going to be entirely different for everybody. But I think for people who might not, you know, understand that as much, you will be seeing the, what's it, day on my plate on socials, and it's like, I can eat all this. And then people are like, oh, I can maybe eat all that as well. I'm a similar height or, you know, weight to what this person's putting up there. But there's so much more going on behind the scenes there. And it's just, yeah, another frustration point for me.
I know. And it's tough because obviously people on social media, and all the credit to them, they want to engage with their followers. They want to show more of their life. They do want to show what they're eating, you know? And yeah, they've got a mad glute pump. You know, the first clip of that reel is going to be a booty pop. But yeah, it's definitely important to just be transparent on those sort of things too. I do like when obviously people put disclaimers on there when they're just like, you know, this is what I eat, but you probably will require a different amount of calories or different foods based on, you know, your own health and fitness goals as well.
Yeah.
But it is really tough, especially when just a lot of things are taken out of context.
Yeah. Physical is all about breaking the mold. Okay. Yeah. So doing things differently, going against the grain, trends in fitness and fashion industries. And so what I like to ask all of my guests is, what is one mold, whether it be nutrition related, bodybuilding related, or gym broadly, what is one mold that you would like to see broken? So like one stereotype almost that you would just like to see chucked in the bin, it's trash, hate it.
I want to see girls training significantly harder in the gym. You know, I'm all for cute, colorful outfits and looking like you've got, you know, sick delts and glute pumps. Like I'm all for it. I love it myself, you know, but nothing is more impressive, including, I'd say, more impressive than a snarly glute and delt pump, than like a girl just going at it on a compound lift, you know, like we're talking just like gnarly lifting faces and just the expressions and all, you know, hell, even some noises, like, you know, the death stares in a mirror when you're just like, want more rep, like you can do this, when you're just like trying to balance and wobble there for your Bulgarian, but you're like, I'm going to get this eighth rep, you know? So I want to see so many more girls like really step into that next level of like, what does it legitimately feel like to train hard and train closer to failure? And breaking that stereotype that we always just have to be these really just cute and just really pretty, just little things in the gym, you know, just kind of doing dainty little things, or, you know, like the closest that you'll get to like, you know, looking like you're going to failure, pushing yourself hard is like, you know, or like, and it's something that I preach to a lot of my clients too, because a lot of the feedback that I give with my clients, because I assess a lot of training footage, because I don't know, even as a bodybuilding dietitian, of course, I'm going to say nutrition's really freaking important. But do you know what's even more important for actually changing your physique? Training, and training hard. And your body's not going to change unless you give it a really good reason to. And you have to give it that proper stimulus in the gym to say like, hey, I demand you to get bigger. But that's going to take some hard freaking work. So a lot of the times when I'm actually reviewing training footage, or I'm seeing things, you know, it's like, this looks really good. Or actually, I'm actually in two minds about that, because I'm like, does this actually look good for your goals? You know, for example, let's say that someone is just doing a shoulder press and they're just going up and down, completely straight face, right? Every single rep is of the same cadence. They get to 12 and they just put the dumbbells down. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
You know, like not a single grimace, you know, like your final rep looked just like your first, you know, and like there was no struggle. There was no intensity. And, it's almost like textbook form, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, now I'm like, actually, no, like that via textbook, sure, that's good form. But, in terms of our goals, like maybe that's actually not good form, or at least that's not actually proper execution of this lift. Like, I need you picking a weight that's probably double in that load. Yeah. And your final rep, like, you should look like you are seriously on struggle street. Like, those dumbbells should be, like, shaking and, like, maybe one goes above the other. Like, you know, your face is wobbling and stuff. It's like, yes, girl, you're, you know, you're fighting. You're pushing yourself. And this is why when you get on stage next, everyone's going to be like, look at those boulders.
Yeah.
So really teaching people what it actually means to train hard, mm-hmm. and particularly females, step outside your comfort zone, you know, and if anything, I personally think it's really attractive. You know, I think it's just like there's nothing quite like seeing a girl red-faced in the gym with like plates loaded up on a leg press or like a freaking hack or just like fighting on a dip. You name it. I'm like, that is so freaking impressive. That got my attention, you know, for all the right reasons. So I think that's one of the biggest things I would want to change about the health and fitness industry is just, girls really embracing that sort of aspect of just like truly training hard, make the lifting faces, you know, they're beautiful.
I love that. And I also love, and you won't have heard every other, you know, person's responses, but the common thread amongst all of these responses to this particular question, it's very much all underlying women's empowerment as well in the gym and that comfortability in the free weight section, you know, like just, stepping out of that mold of, as you were saying, you know, being the pretty petite little things that, you know, don't necessarily train hard. So girls, get after it, okay? Let's get around each other. Because also, as you were saying, you know, there is nothing more impressive than when a girl is absolutely getting after it. And every other girl in the gym is internally, or externally, some of them, but hyping each other up as well. And also, maybe if you see a girl getting after it as well, go compliment them.
It's so nice. Those are some of the best compliments I've ever been given in the gym. You know, like girls coming up to me after I've done a set of dips and they're like, "You are so badass." I'm like, oh, shucks.
Thanks.
You know, but like, I'm not even kidding. I would legitimately be more embarrassed to look like I'm not training hard in the gym than actually training hard. No joke. I film a lot of my own footage to actually like review my intensity, review my form, etc. And there's been so many times in admittingly where I'm like, you know, you're on a leg press and in your head, you're like, oh my God, this is definitely an RPE 10. There's no way I could push a final rep. You watch back the footage, you're like, it doesn't look that hard.
Yeah.
And like, I actually won't even post it to my Instagram story. It looks like I'm training.
Too
like,
easy.
Like, yeah, it's way too easy.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would actually be more I would be more insecure on looking like I'm not in the gym doing business.
Yeah.
And I'm simply just there to just, you know, look good. Which, what a coincidence, you know, actually like really gritting your teeth and really fighting for reps. That is what helps you look really good on a bodybuilding stage.
I love that. Honestly, I have like so many other questions, but that's okay. We could talk about this stuff forever, I'm sure. But thank you so much for your time today. And ladies, I hope that some of that information was super helpful for you. So, Tiara, if anyone watching wants to get in touch with you, have one of those discovery calls, work with yourself, or Jack is the other...
Yeah, so Jack, my business partner, we both own the business called The Bodybuilding Dietitians, which is quite an established coaching business now. We also do a whole different host of content creation through podcasts and infographics on social media. But Cal, thank you so much for having me today. I totally agree. We could chat for hours. This has been a lot of fun. But if anyone does want to get in touch, please feel free to just reach out over Instagram. You could find me at the handle Tiara Nelson, or you can search The Bodybuilding Dietitians on Instagram. You can also search The Bodybuilding Dietitians on any major podcast channel as well. We've got over 300 episodes over on there. And you can also Google The Bodybuilding Dietitians and inquire via our website if you'd like to get in touch regarding coaching.
Love that. And I will pop all of those links in the show notes for you ladies so they're easily accessible. As usual, thank you so much for tuning in to the Physical Podcast. I hope to see you next time. And if you've enjoyed the content that we give you on a weekly basis, please, please, please do like, subscribe, and also leave any comments as well down below what you might want us to address in future episodes. Every piece of engagement that you can... do for us on the podcast really helps us out a lot. So thank you so much for joining us, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode.